You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson, the roving editor for American Free Press newspaper. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Dave.
Mark, you just had an article in American Free Press, it's up on the website, Patriots All Across Nation Urge to Fight Super NAFTA. And for the benefit of the listeners who don't know, probably most people do know who are listening to the show, but I imagine that most of the country does not know what NAFTA means, just like most of the country doesn't know who the vice president is. So most of the country is pretty darn stupid. Would you agree with that, Mark?
Well, uninformed and misinformed and disinformed, that's a complex issue in and of itself. But yeah, the trade matter is a little ambiguous because it's another type of governance or government that goes on semi-independently of elected government.
It's a pretty fascinating topic because I didn't really know much about it, and I still don't know much about it, but I did a cursory review of this Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that's what your article was about.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to read this from Wikipedia about it's under the heading Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership. It says here that the 2005 Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement, it's a mouthful, TPSEP or P4, is a free trade agreement among Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, and Singapore. And I looked to see exactly where Brunei was, and it looks like it's on one of the islands that Malaysia is on.
Correct.
And it says it aims to further liberalize the economies of the Asia-Pacific region. Now, of course, Chile is in South America, but I don't know how they figure that they're in the Asia-Pacific region. But at any rate, it says here, since 2010, negotiations have been taking place for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, and this is what you wrote about, a proposal for a significantly expanded version of TPSEP. The TPP is a proposed free trade agreement under negotiation by Australia, Brunei, and it says here Brunei Darussalam. I'll just say Brunei. Chile, Canada, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, the United States, and Vietnam. Japan has expressed its desire to become a negotiating partner, but not yet join the negotiations as the TPP became a major issue in Japan's 2012 election. South Korea was asked by the USA to consider joining the TPP, but declined for the time being. And this is the last part of this, Mark. The TPP is intended to be a high-standard agreement specifically aimed at emerging trade issues in the 21st century. These ongoing negotiations have drawn criticism and protest from the public, advocacy groups, and elected officials. In part, due to the secrecy of the negotiations, the expansive scope of the agreement, and a number of controversial clauses in drafts leaked to the public. I also went through the entire article and read a bunch of other really interesting stuff. But the upshot of it is that, I guess, these people are meeting behind closed doors.
Indeed.
For the purpose of putting together this pact that kind of violates, at least from my reading, it violates treaties in the way that they're supposed to function. And there's no transparency, but they're claiming that's required because information would leak out and then the negotiating parties would not be able to cut the best deal. What's going on with this thing, Mark?
You almost don't know where to begin, Dave. As I mentioned earlier briefly, it's another avenue of governance where elected officials, as you indicated by reading that, are basically divorced from the process. And as I noted in the article that I wrote that you mentioned, elected officials don't find out what's even in this until it's time to vote for it. And then they're basically told, okay, you don't really need to bother reading the details. We took care of that in all these meetings. They've had 15, 16 meetings going back to March of 2010. The next one, I believe the 16th negotiating round for the Trans-Pacific Partnership is in, drumroll please, Singapore, March 4 through 13. That's the one that's upcoming. The last one was in New Zealand this past December 2012, while we were all transfixed by the fiscal cliff.
Right.
And you want to talk about fiscal cliff and secretive governance. This is the mother of all that. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership would be the largest trade agreement ever hammered out in the history of mankind. And it's amazing to look at how this is done, but it's a very, very tried and true formula. If you remember, the European Union started as the European Coal and Steel Community.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it became the European Community, the European Economic Community. And lo and behold, eventually the nations of Europe, except for Switzerland, wisely, were roped into what's now called the European Union.
Right.
And what this is all about is forging a Pacific Union. And Jim Tucker and I have talked about that in Bilderberg articles. And the people negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership are really the workers carrying out the basic planning of Bilderberg. Bilderberg are planning meetings or general concept meetings. And this type of governance that makes these kind of trade agreements and eventually these big blocks, Pacific Union, European Union, this is the handiwork of the Bilderberg planning. There's so much that could be said, as I indicated, when it says the Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement. What that is a preliminary FTA or free trade agreement that are the building blocks of something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Just as CAFTA, NAFTA, as I jokingly call them, CHAFTA, those are building blocks for the free trade area of the Americas, which is basically synonymous with the North American Union. So what these traders do is they do preliminary FTAs, free trade agreements, and those are building blocks of larger trade agreements. In the Pacific Rim, it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. In this side of the Atlantic, it's the free trade area of the Americas. And then from those, they build a political entity like the European Union, only in the case of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it'd be the Pacific Union. So countries give up their economic sovereignty followed by their political sovereignty. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership, in addition, it's very important to note, as I mentioned in this article that was originally hard copy in the congressional review that we do every week, the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, is about banking. And my sources tell me that for the first time, they're getting real serious about preventing member nations within these trade partnerships, preventing their elected officials and their domestic law from going after the banksters. So they're trying to shield the banksters even as they do these trade agreements. I know what I'm saying is a lot to take in, but it's such an enormous thing going on. And they break it down into building blocks to put it together, and we need to break it down into building blocks to explain it. And if I may, I'll add one more very important point. That is, when they talk about liberalizing the economies, you have to understand what they mean by the word liberalize. Liberalize is to drain the sovereignty from a country. It's to open the gates to the trading regime and to the banking regime so the domestic economies of the member nations are liberalized, that is, open to their intrusiveness, open to their invasion, if you will. And so those countries give up control over their banking systems, give up control over their basic economic policy. So to liberalize is to free up or liberalize things for those in the trading regime, for those in the banking cartels, not to make things free or better for the domestic economies, but for the elite. So the word liberalize is like knocking down the gates. It's to take away any and all economic protections. When I attended a World Bank International Monetary Fund summit a year ago, September, the very word protectionism is a dirty word within the hallowed walls of those institutions. They will hear nothing of domestic protection of economics or economies. There is nothing more repellent to them than that concept. So to liberalize is the exact opposite of protectionism.
It is a lot to take in. You're absolutely right. But it's important that everybody, including myself, tries to wrap their minds around what you're saying and really gain a full understanding of this, because these are the bad guys, right?
They're the henchmen for the bad guys, at the very least. The bottom line is that it's trade officials like the U.S. Office of the Trade Representative and similar offices in other individual nations that are given a long leash to negotiate these things and keep Congress and therefore the people in the dark for the longest period of time possible and until the bills can be brought out and acted upon. But therein lies another thing, and that is that these are really, in essence, what these trade agreements are treaties. If you make a pact or an agreement with another nation and you agree to terms, it's a treaty, really. But they like to use the word agreement, North American Free Trade Agreement, Free Trade Agreements, FTAs. That way, they can try and avoid the constitutional requirement in the United States that two-thirds of the U.S. Senate must concur for these things to take effect. If they call it an agreement, then they can strive for a simple majority rather than a supermajority and have a lower threshold to get over. And so, as you can see, they stack the deck and keep things away from the people in Congress as much as they can.
Yeah, unfortunately for all of us. Yeah, I remember the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, GATT.
Oh, yes.
That kind of kicked a lot of this off, right?
It's a framework. I'd like to know more about GATT. I believe that the U.S. put itself into that thing in 1994, and I believe, without looking it up, that that's the year we joined the World Trade Organization. And what's notable about the WTO is that's when the part in the Constitution where trade is supposed to be controlled by our Congress is handed over to the WTO.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you've been warning about and Jim has been warning about for a while. It says here that the World Trade Organization is an organization that intends to supervise and liberalize international trade. The organization officially commenced on January 1st, 1995, under the Marrakesh Agreement, replacing the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which commenced in 1948. So these guys have been planning this stuff for a while.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Dave. That's correct. The initial GATT building block, the cornerstone, was laid in the wake of World War II, and I believe it was with the Bretton Woods Agreement. I want to say that, again, I don't have that right in front of me, but it was among those things agreed upon in the post-World War II years, which included the Bretton Woods Agreement that created the World Bank, created the International Monetary Fund, and if memory serves, created the basic cornerstone for GATT.
Right. Very important. Here in this article, it goes on to discuss the controversy of TPP, and it says that anti-globalization advocates, I guess you would be considered one of them, accuse the TPP of going far beyond the realm of tariff reduction and trade promotion, granting unprecedented power to corporations and infringing upon consumer, labor, and environmental interests. One widely republished article claims TPP is a wish list of the 1%, and that of the 26 chapters under negotiation, only a few have to do directly with trade. The other chapters enshrine new rights and privileges for major corporations while weakening the power of nation states to oppose them. Do you agree with that?
Yes, thus far, everything I've seen, and it's impossible to read everything on this thing, I'll tell you, but everything I've seen suggests that that's largely accurate, especially with regards to corporations in the form of banks, and banks wanting a completely free rein. They don't want any kind of antitrust sentiments, any kind of antitrust laws, aka like Glass-Steagall that used to be in the U.S. There goes that word again. They want to liberalize economies so it's free rein for them, but no one else. Other corporations undoubtedly would seek the same kind of sanctuary to work their will on the common man as the banks would. It's a very, very widespread and huge issue. But the key thing, as I noted in that article in AFP, was that I was trying to get as much advanced word out there as possible, because while we were transfixed on the fiscal cliff and we've been watching Bilderberg, we have to get better at watching the people that carry out the Bilderberg planning. And that includes these trade negotiators that are basically operating on autopilot with such little oversight that it's ridiculous. And so it's very important that people, as futile as it may sound sometimes, it's important that they call Congress and start ringing phones off the hook early on to make congressmen more aware that they've got to demand that they see what's inside the Trans-Pacific Partnership long before they would vote on it, rather than being asked to vote on it before they've hardly ever had a chance to read it. The switchboard number is 202-224-3121, or you can go 202-225-3121. And calling local and district offices is important, because a lot of times they're not quite so busy and they're a little more attentive to constituent needs. So it's a huge issue, but the main thing is to bring out the opposition now, to get Congress to know what's in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is trying to make global what some states have done at the state level, such as right-to-work states like Michigan, which just voted to be right-to-work, and Indiana, which recently voted to be a right-to-work state, and what Scott Walker's been doing in Wisconsin. It also involves union busting, and so these trade pacts would basically outlaw or make almost impossible to form unions. So it's also union busting. At least it has all the elements of that. There's every indication that that's what it is as well. So the worker bees in these respective economies would be kept at a subsistence level and would just crank out unwarranted amounts of gaudy goods that are sold on the shelves for cheap. And then the CEOs of these corporations get to keep all the spoils. So it's funny how the same concepts will play out from the state to the national to the international level.
Right. I'm glad you brought up the Congress people, because here in the same article under the heading Negotiation Secrecy, it talks about those 30 legal scholars who were critical of course, this is going through the office of the United States Trade Representative, critical of that office as being biased and closed, and as we mentioned earlier, no transparency. And of course, the ambassador, I guess Ambassador Kirk, is fighting back and saying we need to do this, we're being as transparent as we can. But you brought up the really important part of this, which is having the listeners and people across the whole country call up their representatives and their senators and let them know about how you feel about these secret negotiations, which are clearly anti-labor, they're anti the average person. Here it says on May 23rd of last year, Senator Ron Wyden, he introduced this 3225, and it's proposed legislation that would require the Office of the Trade Representative to disclose its TPP documents to all members of Congress. So S3225, guess how many co-sponsors there are?
Without looking it up, I don't know.
Three. So basically, this ain't going nowhere. Our own representatives are against us, Mark. Are they really going to listen?
It's better to call and fail than not to call them. And I would note, for what it's worth, that sometimes bills will pass quickly with only a few co-sponsors. Co-sponsorship is important, but it's not the only measurement of how much support a bill is getting. All that being said, I'd rather call Congress and fail to get a response than not call and wonder what would have happened had I called. And so I would urge listeners to do everything they can while they can to open this thing up to public and congressional scrutiny long before they're forced to vote on it without reading it. They do enough of that, voting on bills that they never read, let alone things that really, in essence, are treaties, but are being treated as if they're not treaties, again, to avoid that two-thirds Senate supermajority and make the hurdle bar a little lower for the globalists to get over. Again, there's so many things that could be said about this. It's a huge issue, but I appreciate you, Dave, bringing up that piece of legislation because it's important to know it exists, and we'll make sure we cover that in the weekly spotlight in Congress that I do for AFP. That's really important to follow up on. The main goal is a Pacific Union that is like the European Union, to reduce the world to just a few economic / political blocks that can then be more easily governed in a world society. They follow a very strict modus operandi, a very predictable pattern, really. And as we noted earlier, it really took hold and got traction after World War II, coming out of Bretton Woods, and they created the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. So it was only a matter of time before they would create the World Trade Organization and this, that, and the other thing. So it's a vitally important issue, and it's a whole branch of governance that goes largely unreported. And even when it is reported, it's reported in very dry, unprovocative terms, so people don't really catch on to how crucial it is.
Right. In that article, it mentioned a website called stopthetrap.net. Have you heard about that one, Mark?
There's so many things. Specifically, no, I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, at any rate, what it is it's a website that allows you to fill in your name, email, your city, your zip code, your country, and send this email to your representative. And it says, subject, don't let the TPP become an internet trap. Send to key government leaders and trade representatives. I oppose any provisions in TPP that would expand the power of conglomerates, including by criminalizing or otherwise restricting the use of the internet. So they're going after the internet too. And I was going to ask you, besides listeners calling up their representatives, is there some kind of a website like this that is around that allows you to let your representatives know via email about your opposition to TPP?
Honestly, I haven't actually seen many of them. I've been so wrapped up in trying to understand this monster. I will note, again, for what it's worth, even the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative has an area on its website for public comments, much like they have for executive rulemaking within the United States. When some sort of rulemaking procedure goes into the Federal Register, you know, whether it's the Forestry Service or the USDA or something, in that rulemaking process, there are often public comment periods that have an expiration date. It seems like similarly, this has a tacit or ostensible public comment component to it on the trade representative's website. I wouldn't put a lot of confidence in it. They probably put it there because it's good public relations. That's another one I'll mention, but I'm not really aware, at least not yet, of a lot of outlets that I would confidently think would have significant impact. Although I'm sure if I were to look harder, I'd probably find a number of them. Candidly speaking, that's the situation from my standpoint right now.
Okay, I did look up some things, and it seems that Japan's agricultural lobby took an ad out in the Washington Post, and this looks like in April of last year, against TPP, and the ad is titled, Don't Let the TPP Rob Your Future, and features a picture of a padlocked factory on the back page of the newspaper's front section. And also, it seems like that there are some protests to TPP, and there was one just a couple of weeks ago in New Zealand that turned violent. Now, I know from reading this article here on Wikipedia that there are protests that have been going on, and I guess the Occupy movement also has formed a protest rally against TPP. If folks want to get involved in these protest movements, how they would do that?
The best thing would be to Google the names of the actual movements themselves, Occupy New York or Occupy Washington. They pretty much all have Facebook pages and websites and email lists and things of that nature and Twitter. The social media is pretty much overflowing with that sort of thing. In terms of protests, of course, a lot of those protests tend to get infiltrated by provocateurs that raise the level of aggression or violence and discredit the legitimate protesters. That's been a repeated and ongoing problem at large-scale protests, going all the way back to the Seattle, Washington protests for, I believe it was for the World Trade Organization. It was a large globalist thing, and that's where it really became evident that a lot of these things get infiltrated and discredited. We can only assume that will continue. AFP, American Free Press, has reported on Wall Street being not only very annoyed with Occupy, but spying on it to some extent and trying to destabilize it in insidious ways. The American Free Press has noted that in recent editions. And I'm sure there's a strong degree of truth to all that. So protesting is a mixed bag. I've been at protests. I've been involved in them to some degree, never heavily. One wonders just how effective they are in the long run, although in the short term, they do call attention to things. This is a tough nut to crack. There's no doubt about it. The key thing, though, is not to wait until it's a done deal, as happened with NAFTA and CAFTA and so many of these things. The Panama Trade Agreement is now in effect, and the one with Colombia is now in effect. These things were largely unheralded. There wasn't a lot of news until they were already done deals, although American Free Press reported about them, at least most of them, ahead of time. The key is what we're doing now, Dave, is getting the word out well ahead of time to get Congress to demand that they be able to see the text of these things right now, not later.
I was able to locate some information on these protests, and it's not just physical, but virtual protests. Here, the Internet Freedom Organization Open Media and other groups launched Open the TPP campaign at openthetpp.net. The website includes a tool that collects citizens' comments. They then project inside the TPP meetings for officials to see. And then there's an online petition website called Avaaz, A-V-A-A-Z, and they have a petition against TPP. And it says here, as of November 27, 2012, the petition has gained over 720,000 signatures. That's huge. And we talked about Occupy. There's a coalition in New Zealand called It's Our Future, and I don't know if they have a website. But at any rate, there is a lot of stuff out there. Hopefully we can have you back again on this topic after the March meeting. Where did you say that was going to be? Singapore?
Yes, Singapore. Okay. And I want to double check that. Hold on. I believe that's right. Yeah, they just had New Zealand, and they've been going since 2010. In order, the meetings have been Melbourne, Australia, San Francisco, California, Brunei, Auckland, New Zealand, San Diego, Chile, Singapore back in 2011, Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, 2011, Chicago, Illinois, September 2011, Lima, Peru, October 2011. Note how frequently they're meeting. Round 10, Malaysia, late 2011, Melbourne, Australia, March 2012, Dallas, Texas, May of last year, San Diego, California this past July, Leesburg, Virginia just this past September, Auckland, New Zealand, the end of 2012, and then, yes, the 16th round, Singapore, March 4 through 13.
Yeah, the first round was March 15th through the 19th in 2010, and the 15th was just about a month or so ago. So they went through 15 rounds in 2010 in about 3 years. So they're meeting five times a year.
Yeah, you consider that Bilderberg meets once a year, at least officially. It gives you an idea of just how busy they are. And I would note that meanwhile, the local branches of the Council on Foreign Relations, which are normally called World Affairs Councils, I've written about this in AFP, the CFR has little siblings that are all over the place, the Council on World Affairs of Dallas, the Houston World Affairs Council, San Antonio, Chicago Council on Global Affairs. These are the organizations that have the global credo, that sell the globalist gospel to the local governments, county governments, state governments, and even the local people. Where there's less population, they'll have regional World Affairs Councils like South Indiana, Kentucky, or something like that. But there's dozens of them under the umbrella of the World Affairs Council of America, or WACA. And they'll be out there right now, you can bet on it, singing the hosannas of free trade and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and scolding people that bring up the word protectionism and things like that.
Right. And the President of the United States, whatever his name is, he is 100% behind this, right?
I've seen no reason, Dave, to think otherwise. I want to be fair. He may just be posturing, possibly, and saying he's behind it, but he's being reticent to reveal any doubts he may have. But the Office of the Trade Representative has been given a long leash by Obama to do this secretly. So unless he speaks up and says otherwise, we have to assume that he's behind it.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photograph of him with a bunch of these other leaders, and he sure is flashing a toothy grin. He looks very happy to be hurting labor and the environment.
You don't see a whole lot of trepidation there, do you?
Yeah. Are you going to be going to Singapore?
Boy, I don't know. That would be an adventure.
Yeah. How long is that meeting for? Do you know?
It's March 4 through 13, so that's, what, about a week?
That's more than a week. Wow, that's substantial. 4th through the 13th, that's 9 days.
So any enterprising reporter going there would have time to adjust to the time zone and the cuisine and the fact that are you in the Southern Hemisphere? Forgive my terrible geography, but at any rate, it'd be a huge adjustment. I mean, I'd love to go if AFP has the means to do it, but I think that independent press needs to be there because the regular press doesn't have a good interpretive way of handling this. They don't know global speak. You, Dave, and me have spent a little bit of time understanding global speak, like the word liberalize that I explained earlier. Liberalize sounds so good. Oh, we're going to liberalize you, but it's very slanted toward the less than 1% that's running the world. So if they knew how to interpret globalese, the language of globalese, maybe we wouldn't have to get independent reporters there, but I think we do need to do that. So.
Right. Maybe we could put up a website and see if we can get some crowdfunding for your trip to Singapore.
I'm a cheap date, so no problem.
All right, Mark.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.